From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Welcome to the News OK Pet Show. I'm Dawn Marks.
I'm Jesse Olivares.
And joining us today is Dr. Zach Coldiron.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. We're going to talk to Dr. Coldiron a little bit about bobcat fever in a minute. But first, we're going to have a little bit of news from Jesse.
A couple of items here that are kind of interesting there. First off, the researchers at the University of Rochester have found that the same blue dye that is used in M&Ms and Gatorade can be used to help people with spinal cord injuries.
Wow.
They did a study that's published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that found that when this blue dye that's called Compound Brilliant Blue G, or BBG, when they injected into rats suffering from spinal cord injuries, that the rodents were able to walk again, albeit with a little limp. The only side effect was that they were temporarily blue. They are going to go out there, and they do plan to submit this to the FDA so they can proceed and try to see if they can get some clinical trials on humans here in the near future.
I guess we might not mind being temporarily blue.
Well, you know, it'd kind of be like Willy Wonka and all that kind of thing. The girl that turned into a blueberry. That'd be fun. And another thing, the other item is that the famed horned toad of Texas, the Texas horned toad, whatever you want to call it, has now a new home. It's in the El Paso Zoo. They decided the lizard, which is the official state lizard of Texas, has been classified as a threatened species. And so they've been trying to find a place for these lizards to go have a, you know, have a nice place to hang out and all the kind of things. And they found that the El Paso Zoo is the only zoo, I guess, in the country that has that meets the same criteria that they need to live, which is hot,
dry.
Yeah. And so anyway, they've brought in three of those horned toads to the El Paso Zoo, and they plan to make them a whole little exhibit and all that kind of stuff. And they say that the feistiest one of the three that were brought in will be featured at a new display that they have on the horned toad. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know, we used to catch those all the time when we were kids. I mean, they were abundant, and now you never see them. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids haven't ever seen one.
We actually had some people come in from Tinker Air Force Base not very long ago and talk on Pet Show about their project out there. They are cataloging and tagging and working with the horned lizards out there.
Really?
Yes, and apparently they have quite a large population on the base. So,
one thing that I thought was interesting, I didn't know until today, but apparently their defensive skills consist of, because they're kind of large and flat, when they're threatened, they apparently lie down on the ground and flatten themselves out so that you can't see them. And if you really get in their face, they apparently spit blood out of their eyes at you.
That's what I've heard, too.
I've never heard that or seen it, but they're kind of scary looking, so I guess I could believe it.
Scary looking? They're cool animals.
Oh, I know. We actually got to pet one that day. I caught them when I was a kid. They're scary looking.
Yes.
They're not scary.
Nothing wrong with being
they
scary
just
looking.
Look scary.
Well, that's all right.
It's a shame. Like it's a shame that they're threatened.
I know it is. I remember we used to catch them in the schoolyard when we were kids, and it was always considered good luck when we caught them.
But are they saying they're threatened? Did they say why? Is it because of habitat destruction?
Yeah, actually, that is one of the things that they said, that the animal, it usually, those lizards, they usually feed on a particular type of ant that is now, I'm trying to, I have that here. It is something that they, this ant that they feast on, it's a venomous ant. I cannot remember it right now, but apparently this type of ant that they feast on has been dying out slowly and slowly, and so with that particular type of ant dying out, it's called harvester ants.
Okay.
Harvester ants.
So those are dying off, and so therefore the lizard's dying off.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so they are so they're becoming harder and harder to find in the parts that they're native to, Central and East Texas. And so, yeah. So
interesting.
All right. Well, we want to talk a little bit to Dr. Coldiron about bobcat fever. We heard something about this not very long ago, so we thought maybe you could come in and talk to us a little bit about it. What it is, I understand that it can be a threat to cats. Is that right?
Yeah, it can be. And what bobcat fever is it's a parasite, a parasitic type disease that's the natural host or the reservoir host tends to be the North American bobcat. So that's where it gets the term bobcat fever. Mm-hmm. It's actually a parasite called Cytozoan felis, and it causes what we call cytozoanosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a rapidly fatal disease in the domesticated cat. It's transmitted, you know, again by ticks, and so it's tick-borne. We tend to see it most commonly during the summer months when, mm-hmm. when ticks are out.
About, you know, right,
and
now.
Yeah. Usually May through September. Those are okay. the months that we see it the most. I think the cases originated, and it's been several years ago, but back in eastern Oklahoma, southwestern Missouri, in that area. And now I think it's a little more widespread than that. I was looking through some reports today online, and they've had some cases in Ohio, and there's been, I believe, some cases even north and west of here as well. So it is out there,
mm-hmm.
and it is, like I said, usually fatal. There's not a real good treatment protocol. We've done a lot of different veterinarians have tried a lot of different things to see if they can pull these cats through the times when they're ill, and the success rate is very low,
yeah.
Less than 5% probably.
Wow. Well, what I had heard was correct then. It was someone, the cat became ill, and it was just very quick that they were gone. So what are some of the symptoms? Do you know some of the symptoms if someone might think that their cat
might
is
have
sick?
This. Uh-huh. Well, generally, it's going to be a cat that's been outdoors. So the cat's had access to an outdoor wooded area where ticks are there. The owner may have seen a tick on the cat. Generally, these animals, it's a lot of non-specific signs, so there's mm-hmm. not one sign that we look for that indicates this cat might have that as an infection. But generally, you're going to have animals that are anorexic, so they don't want to eat. They're lethargic. They lay around a lot. They become dehydrated. They sometimes will have dark urine. Their breathing rates will increase. A lot of times it'll affect their liver, and so they become what we call jaundiced, or they have a yellow tint to the skin. In the vet hospital, a lot of times we'll detect a heart murmur, what we call the capillary refill time, which is kind of a measure of our hydration status and our perfusion status. A lot of times that will be prolonged, and so we, rather than being in the normal, you know, less than 2 second range, we get one that's 4 or 5 seconds long.
Okay.
And then high fever is kind of the classic finding that we see with these guys. Fever anywhere from 103 to 107 degrees.
Wow.
And generally at that point we've got, you know, real problems.
So if you see these symptoms at any point in your animal, probably no matter what you suspect, they need to come see you,
right? They definitely
need
to go see their vet, and the vet usually at that point is going to recommend some type of blood work. You know, there are some things we look for on a chemistry profile, things like that, but we also can detect the organism on what we call blood films or blood mm-hmm. smears. And so we'll actually smear that blood out on a microscope slide and examine it under a microscope, and a lot of times we can find the classic signet rings that we look for that indicate that cytozoan is actually present in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm curious about this. This fever, is it something that it attacks cats, but can it affect other animals?
Generally, what we've seen with cytozoan is it's from what I've read, what I've seen is it affects mostly your felids. So your exotic cats can be affected, cheetahs, animals like that at the zoo could be affected if they were to come into contact with an infected tick, domestic house cats and bobcats. And we don't know really how much it affects the bobcat population. I'm sure there's probably been some deaths, but it they may be resistant to it.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, when these ticks detach from the bobcat, transmitting the organism, and then bite one of our domestic felines, then it becomes fatal at that point.
Is there anything that can be done to prevent I guess, tick prevention? Or?
Yeah, prevention's really going to be your key. I mean, you know, once these animals get it, you know, we can do our best to try to get them through it and support them through the process. But prevention's going to ultimately be key. You know, keep your cats indoors during the summer months, especially if you live near, you know, on an acreage or you live somewhere where there's a woods or a green belt or something like that nearby. Obviously, keep something on them topically to prevent tick exposure or prevent ticks from attaching. There's a lot of good products out there. Frontline, Advantix. Well, actually, can't use Advantix in cats, but there are some products out there. Revolution. There's a few products out there that will help prevent tick exposure, and that's going to be your best bet.
Okay. Well, Dr. Coldiron, we appreciate you coming in and talking with us. And Jesse, thanks for subbing on the news today.
De nada.
So everyone, go out and take care of your pets.